We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. So this morning, our guided reflection invited us to consider how spiritual experience can sometimes be perceived through our bodies. Well, I was telling Haven this story this week, and it struck me that it would be relevant to the lesson as well. Several years ago, I was trying to motivate myself to exercise, and so I found a series of novels by this woman, Susan Howich, that follow a group of people who lived around a fictional cathedral in southern England, and what their life was like from just before World War II all the way through until the late 60s or early 70s. So it's a series of six or seven novels, and you just kind of watch these people go through their lives, and I used it on the treadmill, and I got the big print versions from the library so I could see it while I'm running on, so it took me a long time because I'm only doing about 30 minutes at a shot, and so I feel deeply connected to these people because I spend so long reading these novels, and one of the guys that I felt connected to had been a monk. There's a small monastic community associated with the cathedral. And he, sometime in his mid-50s, decides to leave the cloistered community and to get married. And as you might imagine, that's quite an adjustment, going from all this simple, rhythmic life to the chaos of married life. And he's doing this thing, and it's troubling for him. And so in his troubled state, he goes back to the monastery to visit with the abbot, who had been his spiritual director for all those years, because he needs a little help with how to make life work and how spirituality bears on that. And I was particularly interested to listen in on this conversation because I spent a lot of time talking about spirituality and life with people, so I wanted to see how somebody else does it. And so they get through this process, all very interesting, and at the end of the time together, it gets to the point when the abbot is about to prescribe to this previous monk a spiritual practice that's going to help him through this challenging time. Now, I've been religious all my life, and I know what the spiritual practices are. I've been in those kinds of conversations before, so I'm expecting that I know what's going to happen next. I'm expecting he's going to say, here's a book I'd like you to read, here's some Bible that I'd like you to reflect on, here's some prayers, maybe a time of fasting, maybe an act of service, here's what it is. And so I was a little bit surprised and somewhat taken aback when the abbot assigns him to go to the monastery's woodshop and build a cross for a chapel on the other side of town. And I thought to myself, what? Go to the workshop? That's not what's supposed to be happening right now. Do a project? That's not what's supposed to happen next. That is a spiritual practice. Now, it's not the point of today's lesson, but that experience was when it first dawned on me that we have inherited a tragic reduction of the heritage of spiritual practices that are available to us in the West. And I begin to explore the breadth that was available to us. And so when we talk about working the circle, that is really the distillation of a whole lot of exploring that I did after that reading experience to say, what is our heritage? What do we have available to us? That's not the point, but that's kind of where we got started on this whole working the circle thing. Back to the story. So here's this spiritual director assigning physical work as a spiritual practice. Because the abbot knew, but at that time I did not know, that the ordinary things of our days and of our bodies are an honored part of our tradition's wisdom about how we experience the divine. We can find the divine in all things. I used this quote from Thomas Merton in a lesson several years ago, and my wife printed it out and put it up above her desk, so I've been looking at this quote for 10 years maybe, and it occurred to me getting ready for today that what Merton said applies to this question that we're grappling with right now. How do we experience the divine in our bodies? Here's the quote. It is enough to be in an ordinary human mode with one's hunger and sleep, one's cold and warmth, rising and going to bed. Putting on blankets and taking them off, making coffee and then drinking it, defrosting the refrigerator, reading, meditating, working, praying. I live as my fathers have lived on this earth until eventually I die. Amen. What Merton knew that I did not know was that the ordinary is the domain of spiritual experience. Blankets and coffee and rising and going to bed, in these mundane and very ordinary ways, Merton says, we can experience the divine. Now, it's not surprising that he came from the contemplative tradition, because that's often where we first expand our ideas about God. When we have limited God to being the guy that sits on the celestial throne, and that's the only way we can imagine God, it's very difficult to sense the divine in the ordinary, because we look for the divine in the dramatic. We saw that in last week's lesson. But when we can imagine that the divine is in and of and around everything, part of everyday life, then that changes what we look for. And once we change what we look for, it inevitably changes what we find. And we find that we can experience the divine in something as mundane as defrosting the refrigerator, just as surely as we can in prayers and acts of service. And one ordinary place where many people, for all of our tradition, have repeatedly reported that they experience the divine is in the garden, in the soil, in the dirt, growing things in the ground. Finding the divine by using our minds and our muscles, sweating and lifting and digging and planting and hammering and rooting around in the soil, the deep wisdom of the accumulated experience of our tradition is that we can find the divine in the dirt. We can find God in all things. So when I started this lesson several weeks ago, I suggested that this book, Grounded, would be a good companion for the lesson. Diana Butler Bass, in that book, tells a story about a farmer that she met. And this farmer, like many, did not think of himself as religious. Spiritual, yes. Religious, no. But nevertheless, she says in the story, he had an expanded idea of the divine and was experiencing that divine in the expanded notion. And so what this guy said was, it was a February day in a place, I don't know where it was, but it was somewhere where the snow stays on the ground all winter long. And he came across a small patch of soil that was peeking through the snow. And when he saw it, he got down on his knees and he put his fingers into the cold dirt. And he said it was soft, and he said it was dark. And he said there in the depths of winter, with the cold blowing wind, with no leaves on the trees, with ice in the creeks, nothing in the pastures but stubble, he said, there the earth was waiting. And in that moment, he said, I recognized that I was intertwined with the soil, that we are of a oneness, that we participate together in this cycle that we call life. Intertwined inextricably. So he said, on my knees, and again, he was not a religious man, he said, the earth spoke to me. The soil, he said, is spirit. It is me, and we are of one piece. Now, that's not the kind of language people typically use when they're talking about dirt. If we were to use those kinds of words, usually it would be in a religious context, and usually we would substitute the word God for dirt. But it's not uncommon for the language that I have heard when people try and talk about their spirituality. People often experience something deeply spiritual in the dirt. They use things like finding God in soil, finding God in the garden, finding God in the earth. Something about touching the dirt, people tell me on a regular basis, goes deep within them and has this profound spiritual reality. Well, it kind of makes sense if you think about it from our religious tradition's narrative, because all of our stories of beginning, what we call cosmological myths, all of our stories of beginning start in the soil. All of our stories of beginning, all of our religious feasts, all of our fasts, the rhythm and the cycle of the religious life is tied to the religious life of the soil. And more people are finding out that there are connections to the soil are tangible, but also spiritual. There's a thing that's going on. You've probably seen it happen. As more and more people can't seem to find a place for their spirituality inside organized religion, there is a parallel track that is emerging at the same time. I think there's a connection between the two. More and more people seem to be in finding a deeper and deeper appreciation of the soil. Deeper and deeper understanding of the importance of how we treat the soil. We talk about organic farming or sustainable farming, making more and more places to engage with the soil, urban gardening or urban farming. And more important for more and more people to know the soil from which their food comes. And sure, it's about health, and sure, it's about sustainability, and sure, it's about the transport processes that get food from there to here. But soil becomes, in a physical way, some of the way that we can savor the sacred, some way that we can touch divine mystery. Thoreau said it this way: "Heaven is under our feet as well as over our heads." During the Dust Bowl, Roosevelt was overseeing a time in our nation when our soil was literally blowing away, and he acknowledged our human interdependence with soil, and he said, "A nation that destroys its soil destroys itself." And for Jews and for Christians and for Muslims, our story begins in dirt, in a garden. The name Adam means ground. It means dirt. The name Eve means to breathe or breath. We begin, you and I, in earth and breath, soil and spirit, dirt and the divine. And this whole history of people on a spiritual journey has been choreographed as a dance with the divine, organized around land and soil and the fertility that exists in that soil. In fact, our first story even tells us that when we try to construct the meaning of the word sin, somehow it is related to losing access to the ground, losing access to the garden, losing access to the fertility that is embedded in the soil. What our ancient stories do is they capture a deep and primal accumulated human experience. So because these stories are so rooted in dirt and the garden, it isn't surprising then that we have in our tradition a long history of people reporting having had deep spiritual experience in the garden, in the dirt, in the soil. I will hear from time to time, "My church is the garden. My sacrament is touching the dirt. My church is the woods. My church is riding horses. My church is being out. My church is the sky." I can remember a person telling me, "Whenever I see a flower petal or the stem or the leaf, something inside of me just emerges with hope, with a sense of peace." You can hear things when people talk about this. "I care for this patch of earth, and I see it happen again and again and again through time. Every time I plant a seed and then give it water and sun, protect it from pests, make sure that it matures, then it blooms, then it's harvested, and the cycle starts all over again, and I get this deep sense of something profound that evokes inside of me faith, that I can stand up against fear. I can be awakened to contentedness, that there is a deeply revealed beauty. On this good earth, I've heard, I belong. On this good earth, I've heard, it is well with my soul. Now, that's something that we experience in our bodies. We sweat. We get dirt under our fingernails. We give attention with our eyes and with our hands. We experience these sensations in our bodies and connections in our souls, and we've kind of been trained not to think of that as spiritual. But it could not be more spiritual when we realize that the divine is in and around and of everything. And so we've had imposed upon us the tragedy of great poverty when it comes to the ways that we could experience the divine. Here's a theology term that you might have heard, and if you didn't, you are in the vast majority. Panentheism, as distinguished from pantheism, that says God can be experienced in all things. It is a doctrine deeply embedded into our tradition that God can be found in every rock and every tree. You can have the experience of the divine in every bush or patch of earth, in every man and every woman and every child. And we experience that expanded understanding of the divine in our bodies and in our muscles and in our skin and in our mouths, and through our eyes, and through our ears. In the first lesson, when we did the guided meditation, afterwards someone said, I could breathe more freely. I was inspired by the art of Monet, and my lungs were just able to expand more deeply. That first story of ours, it's a story about the sacred in our bodies. Dirt and soil filled with divine breath, along with every tree and every animal and every bird. And consequently, it's a deep spiritual draw at a very visceral human level that we can do what Jesus affirmed in the story this morning. We can love God. We can experience this divine breath with our hearts and with our minds and with our bodies. We can't define this mysterious reality, but we can experience this mysterious reality, something bigger than we can pin down, by taking in the experience through our bodies. So when we were at the old building, our church was near a creek, and the teenagers adopted a creek, and they began tromping up and down that creek every other month, picking up trash. And it's a way to connect with each other. That was a good part of it. It's a way to serve. That's another good part of it. All those things were true. But it was also an opportunity that I don't think a lot of the teens had in mind when they were starting to tromping through the creek for a deeply spiritual practice, connecting to the divine by tending to the earth. So every Monday, I take care of my grandkids. It's kind of the highlight of my week. And whenever the weather is good enough, we go tromping through the woods. And lately, because it's been a long winter, we've been seeing trash that's kind of washed into the creek, and it's down there, and it hasn't been picked out. And so we've been spotting wherever there is trash, and we say to ourselves, as soon as it warms up, we're going to go get a trash bag, and we're going to put on some water shoes, and we're going to walk up and down the creek, and we're going to pick up, make sure you remember that one, because that's where it is, and that's good, and it'll be nice. Because no trash in the creek is better than trash in the creek, so yes, it's going to be a good thing. But I've also been having in my mind recently how to bring spiritual training to my grandkids in a way that will be relevant to them over their lives. I've been thinking about what are the stories that I tell them and what are the experiences to which I alert them. And my hope is that as we go cleaning out the creek as soon as it warms up, that'll be a chance to share in a depth of spiritual experience. That we can find the divine in all things, wading through the creek, feeling the water around our ankles, picking up trash, feeling the cold and then the tiredness in our bodies, and then coming home and resting. Well, this morning's guided meditation and one another's stories, I hope to be about alerting ourselves to things that we have been trained to ignore. That we can find the divine in the movements of our lives, interacting with the earth, interacting with our own bodies? How do we experience the divine in all things, including the sensations of our bodies? And that's my prayer for us as a community, for us as people in this community, indwelling spirit, alert in our minds, alert in our bodies, and alert in our hearts to the movements of the divine. May that be our experience. Amen. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.